This is Henry Banks, senior producer and host of People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on the show tonight, the latest on what's happening in Haiti with UWS Communicating Arts Professor Ephraim Nicoy. Also on the show, UMD Graphic Arts Professor Teresa Moses and community leader Sandra Benator join me to talk about Project Natural, a natural hair symposium coming soon to the Twin Ports. All of this and more coming up next on People of Color with Henry Banks after this news. People of Color, this is Henry Banks. You're listening to People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today, I'm delighted, honored to be here with UWS Professor Ephraim Nicoy. He is a professor on the UWS campus in Superior, Wisconsin. He recently returned from a wonderful trip to Haiti, and he's here today to talk about the trip and the experience there and what it means for him to go to Haiti. I think this may be your second time
this
that you've gone.
This is my second time, yep.
Yeah, so welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate you reaching out and having the opportunity to come and talk to you about my trip again.
Absolutely. So why don't you, for our listeners, just share why you went to Haiti, why it was important for you to go there.
Yes. So last year, I was invited by an organization. We talked about this last year, named Beautiful Response. And they've been working with some Haitians who have been doing some work on the ground, working with young people and working to make sure that they get education and all that. But the organization realized that they needed to do more. They needed to move to the next level, because once you have children graduating, what is next for them, right, with the high unemployment rate? So they asked me to come over and work on them with them on a little bit on communication and development, so issues related to development. So last year I went there and we looked at some of the things that they are doing, some of the things that are working in the community. And this year we decided to build on what we did last year. So basically I was there to do some workshops with community leaders in a community called Nepli, which is about 30 miles away from Port-au-Prince, and basically going through the whole process of establishing vision, working through vision, how do you collaborate with people to make sure that you achieve the goals that they want to achieve for themselves as well as their community. So I did this workshop with these community leaders on what they want their community to be like. And how do we get to that point? So that was my main mission, going to work with the people and the community leaders.
So about how many people were there that you worked directly with?
13 leaders. And they were made up of men, women, young people as well. So their age difference.
So just a good age range.
Good age group. I really like the numbers because I was able to have women as well as young people in the group, which was really what I was looking for.
So approximately how long were you there?
I was there for 6 days. I went on July 21st and came back on July 27th.
Okay, so a good trip, a quick trip, really.
It was a quick trip.
So can you tell our listeners, okay, so you're doing some communication exercises, you're walking people through the necessity of communicating and the importance of that. Walk us through some of your daily activities with the folks that you were working with.
Yeah. So I had two sections with them. The first session had to do with, okay, let's look at what is going on in this community. What are some of the things that you would like to see change, right? So that is how we started the whole process. And then we moved to, okay, how do we bring about this change that you are looking for? What vision do you have for yourself as well as the community, right? So we were able to work through a little bit of that. And based on their feedback, because I did not want to go and superimpose what I think the community should do, what I think are the needs of the community. I just want it to be organic, something that they generate, right? So we worked through that process, and they identified three main things that they want the community to work with. So one, they want to make sure that we are dealing with, they're dealing with the issue of recycling of plastic, because plastic was becoming a problem in the community, and there were some people who really expressed concern about what was going on. Another thing that came up had to do with the economy as a whole. What are we going to do in terms of businesses, in terms of how do we make sure that people are employed? And then the third thing that came up was education. So based on their feedback, I was able to organize them into three groups. So the following day when we came back, it was, okay, what is the vision that you have? These are the three things that we identified. And then I formed them into groups. So we had the recycling group, we had a economic development group, and then the education group. And this was what was really interesting. So I asked them to work on what they think we need to do, what kind of vision they will have, who are the collaborators, how do we get resources to accomplish some of the things that they want to accomplish. And so I went from one group to another, working with them on what they were working on. And so I got to the recycling group, and they were mostly young people. There were five of them actually in the recycling group. And then I approached them and I said, okay, tell me what you are going to do with the plastic when you collect them. And they started looking at me like, what are you talking about? We thought we were just going to make sure that we are cleaning the neighborhood and, you know, the community. I said, no. This is not about just collecting, because where are you going to keep those things, right? Mm-hmm. This is about creating economic product out of the recycling. We are not just going to collect these things and dump them somewhere. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, okay, I guess we need to do more with this. And so I had to pull up examples of people who have used recycled plastic to make products, to give them an example of what is going on. You know, these are some of the things that people have done in their communities. These are the businesses that people have created using plastic recycled materials. And then all of a sudden, the light.
That's what I was going to ask you. So the light bulb had to have gone off, right?
Oh, yes. Okay, there are so many things that we can do then, right? So then they went through that whole process of maybe we need some people who can come and teach us how to do a few things with this recycled plastic. And we need a place to do those things, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And so the conversation started moving forward. And then I said, oh, yes, you're right. When you collect these things, where are you going to put them in the first place? What are the resources that you need? What are the machines that you need? What are the technical skills that you need to make some of these products? This is where I want this conversation to go.
That is powerful.
It was really powerful.
You're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back.
And so I said, okay, so you realize that this is not only about cleaning your community, it's about creating economic opportunities. And so your recycling group and the economic group are virtually one group, because we are looking at not only cleaning, but creating economic opportunities for some of you young people in this community.
So as they were starting to then see the bigger picture, improving their community, but also finding ways to provide economic opportunity for themselves, it clicked. And so you said there's the economic group and the recycling group. So when they came together, what happened?
Exactly. So when they came together, when I brought the two together, I said, okay, we need to look at how we're going to move forward with this. And then through the discussion, it became clear that they need to have an industrial park. An industrial park, which will be really basic, right? So we're going to look at land, a place. we'll put water because they said, well, we need to wash the plastic containers and everything. We need to have electricity, so maybe a solar system, and then put some structures on this piece of land so that we can start this recycling business. And meanwhile, the economic group had already started talking about, you know, creating all kinds of microfinance and all these things. And I said, yeah, this is where we need to move. You know, this is the direction I want us to move in. And so we came up with one of the key things with these two groups is we are now going to establish an industrial park in this community. And it's going to be an incubation for small business, cottage business development. And so that is one of the key things that I came up with. That is, how do we raise funds to have this industrial park going? Because some of these young people have already started learning how to sew. Some of them are doing all kinds of, you know, technical trainings that they need. And I was looking at, you know, this whole recycling business. You need people who can sew, who can take some of these water sachets. You know, they use this purified water. Most people are drinking water out of these purified water sachets, and they throw the water sachets all over the place. And if you look at some of the things that others have done in other communities, they've been able to piece these sachets together to create shopping bags, to create trash bags, to create all kinds of things. And so you need people who know how to sew. You need people who know how to design things, who can cut things, who can, you know.
So what it does then is it continues to provide jobs or potential jobs to a lot of people there.
Exactly. And that is one of the things that I wanted to emphasize with them, because I said, okay, well, you know, as we get to this industrial park, as we work on that, I want you to think about the next steps, you know, marketing and all kinds of things. And I wanted them to focus on how are we going to take advantage of Port-au-Prince, for example, which has a population of 2.something million, and Léogâne, which has a population of about 350,000, you know. So I wanted them to understand that they need to take advantage of the markets around them. I didn't want this thing to be more of, oh, we're going to create products and send it abroad and sell, which is fine, you know, but I wanted them to see how they can internally generate some of these economic activities and be able to support. Because if you can make shopping bags out of recycled water sachets, then you are going to reduce the number of plastic bags that are used. You're going to have products that people can put mangoes in to sell on the streets instead of putting them on the floor, on mats, right? So there are so many other economic benefits as well as health and social benefits to some of these products.
That's very good.
And so this has really been my my project, my new project now. How do we get this thing going?
So you're looking forward then to going back again?
I am looking forward to going back. And I want to really, by the time I go back next year, I want us to have this concrete thing established. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to take too much. I think looking at the economy, looking at how the cost of living and all that, cost of land and everything, I would say, you know, with about $50,000, we should be able to establish this industrial park.
That, you know, low?
Yeah, I think we
by our standards.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that would be a great way to really, because you're not only looking at the recycling, I'm looking at how some of these young people can do other things, like water. You know, we are having really problems. A lot of people don't have access to potable water. Wow. And this community has streams, you know, they have a lot of spring water in their community. So how can we even generate water purification processes?
So are you asking, for example, okay, so you just recently returned from this beautiful Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
Such a beautiful place.
It is beautiful. You should see my pictures in the ocean.
Oh, is that right? I'm looking forward to seeing those soon. So I have a friend who is a professor at UMD, at the University of Minnesota in Duluth, His name is Rudy Perreault. He is a Haitian professor. He is from Haiti and goes there every year, goes back home every year. The organization that you spoke of earlier called Beautiful Response, if you, Professor, could take just a moment and just tell our listeners about Beautiful Response.
Okay. Yeah, so Beautiful Response was is an organization that was established a few years ago. And basically what they do is they help with education. So in the past few years, they've been raising funds to help support a community school project. So they've been paying the teachers and providing going back to school materials for young people, children in Haiti. And their mission is basically not to go and take over whatever Haitians are doing. And they have another project in Uganda too. But what they do is just be a support to what the local community is already doing, right? So instead of going and dictating what should be done, they say, okay, you are on the ground, you know your people, you know what you need, we are just going to support you, right? And so they go in and just provide the additional resources so that the people on the ground can do their work. And they have really been doing this a wonderful job where they're raising funds and supporting many of these organizations in Haiti. And again, that's why they realize that we need to do a little bit more, right? And so not only are you going to support them to get through education, but you're also going to look at when they graduate, because over the years, they've been able to support a lot of young people who are now graduating high school. And then the thing is, well, okay, what do we do? Right now we've graduated, some of us are into done some technical, some of them are seamstresses, and they've had people donate machines, sewing machines to some of these people. But you need to create that economic engine, you need to create that economic opportunity. So that is what Beautiful Response does, and the reason why I'm really excited about working with them is just how they let the local community take control. And then with support and guidance, they encourage them to do what they know best. And of course, they provide technical support.
So they were smart enough then as an organization not to assume that they know everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? So what happens is, so this year, for example, before I went, there was a dentist who went before me. And last year when we were there, they realized that so many of the young people, children, have not even had any, you know, dental work or cleaning, anything like that. So this time they brought in a dentist who went with them and provided free cleaning and, you know, dental work for the community. And so basically they are feeding off of what the community is, you know, doing, what the community is saying, oh, we need this. And then they try as much as possible to gather resources to help their community.
You're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back.
I'm here with Professor Ephraim Nicoy. He is a communicating arts professor here at the University of Wisconsin in Superior. We're talking about the country, the beautiful country of Haiti. He's excited about his trip and his return to the area. He's looking forward to heading back to Haiti next year. And the reason I'm saying this and asking you to come back each year to the show, is there a way that my listeners may get involved in helping with some aspect of what you're doing?
Exactly. There are so many opportunities for your listeners to really help us out. Looking at this major project that I'm doing right now that I just talked about in terms of the industrial park, one of the things that we're going to do is through Beautiful Response to be able to establish like a special project where we're going to do this, you know, and solicit for not only monetary funds, but also people with certain expertise who will be ready to go in and say, oh, I know this skill, I have this skill set. I can help with this community, right? I can do A, B, C, and D. And, you know, so they can contact Beautiful Response. And what they do is that they have Beautiful Response has trips, 2-3 trips a year to that community. And so they can sign up to go with the group.
So Beautiful Response is the name of the organization. You can probably just type in Beautiful Response on the internet.
Org, and then you'll see the organization. Okay. And so they can decide to go physically and say, okay, I want to go on this trip and see this community and see what is going on there, right? So they can go go on that trip. And also they can donate towards some of these projects that we are doing right now. It's really a great opportunity to serve a lot of young people. And, it's really exciting to get into this community again. This is my second year going, and they're like, oh, yeah, we'll see you again next year, right?
And I That's said, great. That's great.
So your listeners, really, we all have a role to play, right? And the key thing about Haiti is, you know, most young people in Haiti are really hungry for development. They are hungry to do a lot of work. They are hungry to be, you know, productive. You know, the problem is just lack of resources.
So there's abject poverty there, right?
That is the thing, because you're looking at a lot of people making less than $2 a day, right? And so you look at these young people as I play soccer with them. You know, I love playing soccer. So when I go there, I'm like, yeah, he's back. We get to play soccer, you know. And as you interact with them, as you talk to them, you realize that they just need a little bit of capital to just do some of these projects. One of the things that came out with the economic group was that when we talk about the microfinance, I got to know that the women have already established a little bit of a microfinance kind of group where they have a credit thing. So I said, okay, so how much do you have in this funds, right? And we did the math with the currency and exchange rates and everything, and realized that they only have about $1,000 in this pot that they are all drawing from. And I realized that, well, they've already established some of this thing. They've already started looking at rules around how people borrow the money, how they spend the money, how they pay back, and all that. But they want to do more. So how do we capitalize? You know, how do we add more capital to what they're already doing so that they have more opportunities to do more trading, to buy more materials, to do whatever they are doing? And that is another area that I think will be really beneficial to them, because many of these young women and men are already doing this microfinance and they need a little bit more capital so that they can do more. Education is always an area that people can be of help, you know, in terms of help. The reason why education is a tricky part is that you have a lot of community schools. And actually, before coming here, I just got a text from somebody that I met who was in my workshop, and he is a teacher. And during the weekend, he works with this organization, another organization that is trying to educate street kids. And so this guy volunteers to go to this organization, and you can just see them under trees trying to teach these young people. And so he came to me and said, you know, we really need a sponsor. We really need somebody who can sponsor us to put up structures so that these kids can get a place to study and pay some of the teachers, because all the teachers are volunteers now. And they are really passionate about education, even though they are not being, you'll be surprised how much, you know, Haitian teachers make, you know, very, very little. Mm. And in spite of that, many of them are volunteering their time.
Because it's a labor of love for them.
Because it's a labor of love for them. And I looked at, they sent me some of the pictures and what they are doing and all that. And it's really, really fascinating to see how many of these young people, many of these community members are really hopeful that if we can get our young people educated, if we can get them economic opportunities, we as a people are going to move forward. And it tells you how people are now organizing themselves and saying, okay, we may not be able to rely a lot on government, but we can mobilize ourselves, get our skills, make sure that we teach our educate our children so that we can make progress. So there are so many ways that your listeners can really be very a blessing to.
I have a couple more questions for you. One question I have for you now, you talk about the resilience of these wonderful, remarkable people. And I can see that when I see news reports and I see this, that, and the other as it relates to Haiti. Mm-hmm. They've gone through some severe natural disasters. And in many cases, you would think you wouldn't survive that, you know, but they still came back. And they're still kind, and they're resilient. They want to achieve educationally and economically, not giving up.
Exactly.
The question I have to you is, how do they do it? When you see them, how are they able to do this and really want to achieve?
It is hope. It is hope embedded in faith, right? And so you see how, you know, many people in Haiti are people of faith, you know. And so there is that resilience. There is that hope that as we persevere, as we endure, as we do our part, it's going to be well. You know, that is what keeps people going. And that is really a remarkable thing. And the fact that, in spite of everything, people are ready to mobilize themselves. They are ready to sacrifice their time. They are ready to sacrifice their resources that they have to make sure that they move forward. Tells you how much faith and hope are embedded in the resilience movement, right? It is very easy for many people to give up, you know, and say, oh yeah, we cannot do anything, you know. But talking to some of these young people in these workshops and looking at the ideas that they have, looking at the enthusiasm that they have, in spite of everything, it tells you that with a little help, with a little push, with a little resource, many of these young people are going to do great things. And that is the thing that amazes me too. It is that hope and faith that, you know, things are going to get better.
Well, you're talking about faith, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I hear you say that about the Haitian people and the population being so faithful and hopeful, I then equate that with the African heritage community in America being a faithful group. Mm-hmm. Having a strong faith in mm-hmm. God, mm-hmm. being resilient mm-hmm. Despite the odds, mm-hmm. I see that as being very connected.
Exactly.
Very connected.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
You know.
And without, you know, without that, it would be really tough to survive. You know, and that is what most people don't think about in terms of without faith. You know, then you get to the point of despair. And once you descend to despair, then we have issues, mm-hmm. right? And so when you see people exercising their faith in different forms, it is not only about the fact that they are worshiping a creator, our creator and all that. It is also about survival. It's also about resilience. It's also about hope. Mm-hmm. And that is what most people sometimes forget. Mm-hmm. You know, it is rooted in the hope that there is. You know, I on the plane to Haiti, I was talking to two Haitians who were on the same aisle, and said, "Oh, so how long have you lived in the States, and what are you going to do?" And You know, and then we talked a little bit about the riots. I don't know if you heard about the riots. It was a week before, a week or two before I went. So I had to monitor the riots that happened with the increase in the petrol fuel prices.
Right on. Yep.
Yeah. And so I talked to this young man, and then after talking through what was going on with corruption and everything, he turned and said, God will have the last word.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
You know, and that really struck me. You know, this is a young man who had lived in the States for so long, you know, for a while. He was going back to visit. He looked at everything that was going on and said, God is going to have the last word. You know, and for me, it was really revealing. It was just it tells me a lot about faith. It tells me a lot about hope. And that even if it doesn't happen in this life, there is still hope.
Oh, that's rich.
That is
very rich. That's very
rich. And talking about Gene, actually, I've been in touch with Gene.
Okay, very good.
UMB.
Very good.
And actually, we were emailing back and forth. He was supposed to leave Haiti on the 21st, and I was getting in on the 21st. So
okay.
At the airport. But
sure.
Yeah.
I'm glad you connected, though,
yes,
you know, even for the future.
Yep.
Is there anything else, Professor, that you would like to leave for our listeners related to your recent trip? Again, indicating how people can get involved. And one question I do have additionally for you is, are you planning any fundraisers here to assist Beautiful Response at all?
Yeah, I've not really thought about it just because of the technicalities, but
sure.
I it is something to think about. Thanks for bringing it up.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that in this day and age, it's very easy to, you know, look up an organization and make a contribution. And so I will appeal to your listeners to go to Beautiful Response, look at what the organization is doing, and see if they can really be of support. I would really appreciate their support, because the organization has really been working hard. And, you know, it's a very small organization. It's not one of those big ones that is raising, you know, a lot of money. It's just doing this small thing that they can do in terms of helping these communities. So I will encourage your listeners to visit beautifulresponse.org, look at our Haiti projects that we're doing. If anybody has any expertise and wants to help with this industrial park to start business incubation in this community, I really appreciate their support, both financially and through their technical skills. And so I think maybe we'll have to put my email on the website, and people can email me.
We can make that happen.
And then we can talk more about how they could be of support and blessing to this mission.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I appreciate you so much for coming in this evening and talking about this very important, Beautiful Response, the organization and the work that they're doing. In Haiti, you are part of this wonderful work, and as much as possible, I think getting the opportunity to go beyond what we would normally do on our everyday life, in our everyday life, I think has all the potential to make the difference.
Exactly.
Always the potential to make a difference.
Exactly.
And bettering the lives of others. Professor Ephraim Nikoe, professor in the UWS Communicating Arts Department. I am so honored that you're here today.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate this. Thank you for all the work that you're doing and for our community. And we really appreciate what you do.
Thank you. Thank you, folks. You're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Henry Banks. Thanks for joining us again. I'm delighted to be here in the studio right now with community leaders, Professor Teresa Moses and Sandra Oyenloye. They are here to talk about natural hair, as it is a big part of the African heritage community. Welcome to the show, folks.
Thank you.
Yes.
Absolutely. So I'm going to give you just a moment to, if you want to say something about yourselves, you know, what you do in the community, because I know our listeners like to know a little bit more about our guest and what they do and the impact they're making on the community. So I'll start with you, Teresa.
Sure. So I'm the creative director at a design studio called Blackbird Revolt. We do social justice-based design work and artwork and creativity. I'm also an assistant professor of graphic design at the University of Minnesota in Duluth. And then I hold a variety of positions in the community, like on boards and whatnot. So I serve on the Duluth NAACP board. I serve on the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial Committee board. And I also serve as the director of diversity and inclusion for AIGA Minnesota, which is a nationwide graphic design organization.
All right. Thank you. And Sandra?
Yes, I am the co-founder of Dansan Creatives. We have a few different community initiatives that stem from the Art Poetry Group that hosts spoken word at the Zeitgeist on Tuesdays for the rest of this year. And then also, we also have our creatives, which does Goody Night, and we reach out to different artists in the community to give them a platform to share their arts. And then I also work for the University of Minnesota Duluth in the Office of Diversity and Inclusion as a program coordinator.
Wow, so you're both very busy.
Yes.
I should say. And recently married, too.
Yes.
So congratulations to both
Thank
of you.
Thank you.
So what is Project Natural?
Yeah, so Project Natural started first with my own natural hair journey when I was living in Dallas at the time and going to school, finishing my master's degree. And I came up with this idea of studying this as a topic for my thesis, which I wasn't necessarily sure would be something serious that academia would find serious enough, right? And again, that's my own internalized stuff as well. So I came to I fortunately had really good advisors, and they were like, no, this is exactly what you need to be studying. This is exactly what's relevant as far as design research goes. So from there, I talked to, you know, over 200 women. I interviewed them and surveyed them and found out about their natural hair journey and realized that I wasn't alone in the struggles of natural hair. And so with that, I birthed Project Natural, which is really just a way of creating spaces for people to come together and do three things, which is educate themselves, connect each other to different resources, and then be empowered. Because those are the three things that I found that were the most valuable in this natural hair journey. And if you don't have those things, you're more likely to continue using chemical relaxers to straighten your hair, to assimilate to Eurocentric beauty standards. But if you have a support system and access to information to educate yourself, you're more likely to be able to learn all the new things that you'll have to learn with doing natural hair.
So really, why was it important to get this started? Why was it necessary? I know you talked about the how, you know, how that process started, but why do you believe it's necessary to talk about this, to deal with these specific issues as they may affect African heritage people today?
Yeah, so Project Natural's purpose is really just to gear women away from using chemical relaxers, because for me, the main foundational piece of this is that chemical relaxers are so dangerous for, you know, our skin, our scalp, our hair, and because we are Black people and there are disparities within the healthcare system, that isn't studied a lot. So if you look out there and you try and find information or scientific data on like hair dyes and pregnant women, you can find that because every woman, like, you know, has some experience with like hair dyeing or something, or, you know, at least you know someone. But if you go and you look up chemical relaxers and pregnant women, you will not find any data. And the thing is, chemical relaxers are so much more dangerous than hair dye, right? So you get like things like alopecia, and you get things like fibroid tumors, you know, you get scalp burns, you know, all of these things that are really detrimental to our health, just so that we can feel accepted in society, right? Because if you are natural, you know, you can still straighten your hair. That's something you can still do without chemical relaxers. So Project Natural was really just a way of making sure that women had access, you know, to that education to be able to style their hair in a different way that is not actually harmful to them, potentially their baby, and then also potentially giving them fibroid tumors and cancer, you know, so.
So you mentioned straightening your hair. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about straightening your hair as opposed to just letting your hair go. Does that sound right?
Sure. Sandra, if you want to talk a little bit about
Could
that.
You talk about that, Sandra?
Yeah, of course. Letting your hair go in its natural state would just be you maintaining your hair as is, right? Straightening your hair can be achieved by different methods. So one would be with a hair straightener, right? Applying heat onto your hair to straighten your hair, which is actually highly damaging for your hair, especially if you're doing that consistently. Mm-hmm. And then also, as Terry spoke earlier, was chemical relaxers, which straightens your hair for a longer period of time and is also just as damaging as straightening your hair consistently. And it has other causes to your health that hasn't even been studied yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I always like to ask this question. So I've known for years that it's almost taboo really to go up to a woman, especially an African heritage woman, and start messing with her hair. Can you talk about that? Is it okay to do that, or is it not okay?
It's definitely not okay. And I think that, both of us being women of color have definitely experienced this in one shape or another. You know, I've had lots of people come up to me and touch my hair or touch my braids. And I actually had a time once, I tell the story that I was in Target and a woman came up to me. I had braids and she came up to me and she started touching my braids and was like, "Oh, I just love your dreads." You know, this is a white woman, of course. And first I'm looking at her like, these aren't dreads. These are braids. And two, like, please do not invade my personal space, and think that it's okay to just touch me without asking. So those are things that women of color face in predominantly white communities very often. And it is not okay because we're not property. We're not pets. We're not on display for anyone. Just as much as everyone has property rights, this is a part of our being, that this is us. It's our space. Mm-hmm. It's very unacceptable.
And it's really like a conversation about consent, especially if I don't know you. Now, Project Natural gives folks the ability to actually have these conversations and ask questions and, things like this it's dedicated to natural hair. So if you have questions and you want to know, come to spaces dedicated for that. If I'm just out shopping at Target, I don't want to be approached.
No.
You come and asking me, I had that happen in my apartment building as well. Like, someone came to me and just started asking me about how I do my hair, which, that's great, but, ask me my name first. Try and get to know me, build a relationship, so.
Yeah. So, bottom line, don't do it.
Don't do it. Definitely don't do it. And I think that sometimes people don't know how that feels. So actually with that Target story, what ended up happening was I actually saw the same lady in a different aisle and walked up to her and touched her hair.
Really?
And asked her what shampoo she used.
Uh-huh.
How did that go? Well, she got red and I could tell that, from my doing that, it was more of an experience for her to know that, that's not okay. And just as much as you did not appreciate me coming up to you while you were shopping and touching your hair, it's just as unacceptable for you to do that to me.
I mean, that was bold, right? On both parts, right?
Yeah, wow. You have to kind of think about what's the witty thing that I'm going to do next when someone tries to do it again?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it takes practice because I feel like the first times that happens to you, it's like you're kind of shocked and you don't know necessarily how to feel or how to react to it. And then over time, you just kind of think about it the next time this happens, this is what I will do.
Yeah.
Wow, I am so honored. I'm here with Professor Teresa Moses and Sandra Oyenloye. I have to get used to that because it's all new, both of you.
It's
all new. And so that's going to be a challenge for a lot of us in the community, right? We've known you under different names, and now that you're so happy, looking happy, and married to two wonderful young men in the community, Daniel, and also to
Jordan.
Not forget Jordan. These are wonderful young men.
Thank you.
You know that.
Yes.
So, again, I just wanted to make sure we mentioned their names here today as well. So where do we, as African heritage people, get hair products, natural hair products, for us in a predominantly white, almost all white region? How do you navigate that if you're listening to your African heritage and you're saying, hey, I need some products. I can't find it. Yeah. I can go to one place and the shelving for that is as small as whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Is there any other options for those individuals?
Unfortunately, we are not going to have the immediate access. I mean, that even spills into like makeup, you know, and things like that for our skin tone. So you will have to either drive somewhere else, like the Twin Cities, or order online, which is what I do. And so whenever we do have, like when we had the workshops, and we'll also be doing it at the symposium, is we actually were able to educate on how to make your own natural products. So if you do buy like raw shea butter and you buy like some essential oils and like, you know, you have a conditioner that you tried out but you didn't like, there's like some formulas and mixtures that you can do to create a more moisturizing product for yourself. So there are some things you can do in your kitchen as well, which again, going back to the educational pieces, I have to say that I am an educator. Like that's what we're about. So if we can provide you the resources to be able to do that and say, hey, here's the things that you buy, here's how much you should use of whatever thing, it makes it a lot easier. But unfortunately, yes, that is something that we lack in this community is African heritage hair products.
Yeah. Sandra, were you wanting to say some more about that?
I was just going to add to the piece about just making stuff in your kitchen. You know, that's a part of what we also did with our workshops this year, and we will be doing at our symposium, is kind of playing with that. And the cool thing about that is you get to learn your hair, you know, because not all of our hair is the same, you know? So as you're learning your hair, you can make products that are best for your hair, whether it's like it gets oily or whether it's, you know, it's one way or another.
Yeah, that's with the changing demographics with regard to the African heritage and other populations of color happening all over the state of Minnesota, that has to change.
Mm-hmm.
That really has to change. And I appreciate you, the both of you coming in and talking about the lack of, but also talking about there are ways of getting these products that you need. So we have people listening over in Ashland and Bayfield, Lake Nabagaman, up in Two Harbors, down in Cloquet, all the way close to Hinckley.
Yeah.
Okay, so if there are folks that would want to be a part of this, how would you encourage them to be a part of this? This is an exciting opportunity for the whole entire region, not just for Duluth and Superior, but I think other folks who may be struggling with these kinds of topics might want to be there.
Yeah, and the thing, too, is that it's not even, while we are focused on the empowerment of Black women-identified folks, anyone can come. And that's the amazing thing. So stop stopping people in Target. Come down to the Natural Hair Symposium and just learn some stuff and empower another community. Like, I mean, I think to me, it's very empowering other folks. So, like, come and be a part in that way. Yeah, I would say definitely get involved and go to projectnatural.com/symposium. While the event is completely free, you do need to register. And that is for us to be able to know how many swag bags we need to have because, yes, we have grant funding, folks, and we have full-size products, not these packets. We have full-size products. We have these really cool swag bags that I've designed. I mean, we have some really cool stuff that's going to be happening at the symposium. We don't want you to miss out. So make sure that you come and go online to projectnatural.com/symposium and make sure that you register.
Gosh, yeah. So you really, this is going to be really like a major event.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Over 3 days. I know you want to mention the 29th as well, right?
I do. Also from 3 to 6. So the 29th will then, we'll move into our panel discussion. So we'll be talking with a bunch of other natural people in the community about their journey, about, you know, what they're doing in their communities to empower themselves and each other. And then we'll be allowing the community to then tell their own hair story, you know, to tell your own story of, you know, how, what your process has been, right? Because we all have our different processes. We all have different types of hair. Going back to the dolls, we'll be having those. And the cool thing about them actually is that we have a variety of different textures, right? So if you come and you're like, oh, I'm really curious, so I really want to like really play with my hair type, you know, or play with this one, there's different textures that you can choose from, and you can find one that, you know, closely resembles yours.
Wow, that is very cool.
And that one will be creating like natural hair products as well.
Yes.
So we have so much, we have boxes and boxes of products that we don't want to just keep. So please, you know, register for the symposium and come out so that you can take that home.
Register for the symposium. The address again
is projectnatural.com/symposium.
Okay, so is there like a phone number or what have you, if somebody wants to give you a call? Do you want them just to go to the website? Maybe somebody listening does not have that web availability. Is there a phone or an email possibly?
We do not have a phone number. Okay. Thank you for pointing that out, though, Henry.
Yes.
We should probably add like a Google Voice number in case someone wants to contact us in that way. But if you do go to that website or you find a way to get to that website, I do want to say something about accessibility. We have made available, or in our budget, is to purchase bus passes from the event. So if we definitely can't meet you beforehand, but if you did come to the event and you wanted a bus pass to get back home or wherever within the city, we can give that to you.
That is very good.
We have thought about ways of making this more accessible in that manner.
So. That is very, very good. So tell our listeners where this is going to be held.
Oh, yes. It's going to be at the Dr. Robert Palace Cultural Center, and that's at ACO. That is right downtown. Again, very accessible to the bus lines, but the address is 202 West 2nd Street, and that is in Duluth.
202 West 2nd Street in downtown Duluth. It's open to the public, and I'm excited about this. I hope a lot of people come and just fill that place and learn all kinds of information about natural hair and the importance of keeping our hair natural.
Yes.
So is there anything else you want to share with our listeners before we close the show?
I can't think of anything.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be some really good speakers. Really great stylist. I mean, everyone is very excited for this to happen. I mean, there's so much free stuff, y'all. So please register so we can give that out to you all.
Yeah.
Create some community connections with each other. I'm very excited for, again, those three elements to happen all on at each one of those days. So
yeah, and so you're working to get rid of some of those myths that are out there about African heritage people.
Yes.
That is really good work. I'm happy and delighted again that Teresa Moses and Sandra Oyinloye have taken the time to be on People of Color today. This is a great thing that you're doing. Thanks for listening to People of Color with Henry Banks on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Elliot Sweary is the producer of this show. Have a great evening and a great weekend.